Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Hope everybody had a good weekend. It is Monday, and that means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews, and later on my dad will tell a joke, because it's a jokey time. And in honor of the release of Captain America Civil War, we are going to talk about comic book movies. And in honor of Mother's Day, which was yesterday, we're going to talk about mothers in movies and on TV and stuff. So we're going to have a little fun with some mom stuff and some superhero stuff. That's all coming up. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, and you can send your text there, too. And you can also check us out at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Let us say hello to Eric Childers and Colin Suter, who join me every week from eFilmCritic.com, RogerEbert.com, and more. We talk about the movies, and we talk about the box office with Eric, and much more. And here is Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And here's Colin. Hey, Colin.
Hello there.
How are you?
All right.
All right. Not a lot to talk about in terms of new movies this week.
Not really.
No. Why don't we start out with, Eric, why don't you one more time explain to everybody about the Chicago Film Critic Film Festival, Chicago Critic Film Festival.
Yes. Well, on May 20th, we're less than 2 weeks away from this event. It's our fourth year of this film festival that members of the Chicago Film Critics Association, including Colin and myself, started. Film critics in the organization program the festival. We pick films from film festivals and screening links from all over the place, looking for movies that we want to showcase and have their Chicago premieres. So we have 26 features. We have 14 shorts, all put together by Mr. Suter himself. And we have passes on sale for $150, and that gets you into every film, every shorts program, every little shindig we got going on at the Music Box Theater. And tickets are on sale as well, individual things. We have guest stars coming in: Craig Robinson, Michael Pena, director Ty West, and Martin Starr. Numerous filmmakers throughout the entire week. It's promising to be our biggest year yet, and we hope people come out for it because we're really proud of these movies that we're going to be showing off for their premieres here.
Okay, cool. And people can check it out at themusicboxtheater.com.
Mm-hmm.
And at the Chicago, Chicago Critics?
ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com.
ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com for more information. And Colin, you programmed all the shorts.
Yeah.
And
animation, documentary, narrative, experimental, all kinds of great stuff.
All right. So that all starts on May 20th. May 20th through the 26th at the Music Box Theater. Now, speaking of the Music Box Theater, I had an interesting.
You want me to laugh?
I had a really interesting Friday. Friday night, the one thing this weekend besides Mother's Day that I was looking forward to was seeing Mad Max Fury Road in 35mm at the Music Box Theater. Been planning it for a couple of months now. I ended up not making it. Friday night was a nightmare. It was a nightmare. So anyway, long story short, I left my phone in the cab and couldn't make it to the movie. And luckily, after waiting what seemed like an eternity, the cab driver came back. I did get my phone. Nothing was missing. Everything was fine. But ultimately, I missed the movie and I went home and I was very upset. And Colin, you went.
Yeah, I went.
And
it was very strange just trying to figure out what the heck is going on with Nick.
Yeah.
He posted that he's here. I don't see him here.
As the cab was pulling up to Addison and Southport, because there was a lot of traffic on Southport, as I was pulling up, I posted that I was at the theater, because I was. I just hadn't walked in there yet. So I posted, I'm at the theater, okay, and I'm about to get out. I get out of the cab. I walk out of the cab. I am like 2 feet. I've walked 2 feet. I turn around, and I realize my phone is gone. Now, Dan knows knows about this because I was wearing my black, which I have with me right now, my Blackhawks sweatshirt. I got a hoodie, a Blackhawks hoodie sweatshirt. And the pockets are very, very, they're shallow, shall I say. The pockets on the jacket. And one morning when Dan and I were going, Dan, you remember this, right? One morning when we were getting ready to leave, I was getting into the car And what did you? What was your reaction?
I was just like, "Are you okay?"
Well, I had some stuff in both pockets of this sweatshirt, and as I was getting into the car, I was trying to balance myself to get in and hold the things in my pocket so they wouldn't fall out.
It was like looking through a wormhole at 80-year-old Nick trying to sit down in 30 years.
And he's like, "Are you all right?" I'm like, "Yeah, I got stuff in my pockets and it'll fall out." So I had to like balance myself. So I had that sweatshirt on, the same sweatshirt on. I put my phone in my pocket, and I was, it was almost midnight at that point. So I was like, "All right, I got to get out of here." I jump out of the cab, I walk 2 feet, and then I'm like, "Oh, damn it, my phone." And I realized my phone was gone. So anyway, long story short, I didn't get in, and it was a horrible night. And it was horrible. But anyway, you went, Colin.
Yeah, I went, and it was a pretty sensational experience.
Yeah,
as Mad Max Fury Road just is in general,
right?
But seeing it first of all with a very enthusiastic big theater full of fans, who knew every line and loved every character and everything. That in itself is a wonderful communal experience. But just seeing it in 35 millimeter, Grant, I mean, the movie was shot digitally, so it's not like you're gaining purity or anything like that. It's nothing to do with that. This is clearly just a conversion thing, but it was a really kind of scratchy, grainy, grungy, aged 35 millimeter film.
Mm-hmm.
This thing had been played quite a few times. That was the cool, that was the extra cool thing for it, because like that's kind of how it should look, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like, okay, now we're flashing back to Mad Max in its prime, like back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And now I feel like a kid again seeing a new Mad Max movie. So that was cool too. Just a unique way to see the film, and I really hope they do it again so you have a chance to see it, because I think you would have dug that as well.
Yeah, I was just so discouraged I didn't go on Saturday.
I understand.
I just stayed home, and I watched it at home.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
Right.
But I needed to watch it after the Saturday Night Live that they aired. Oh,
God, Nick, why?
Oh.
It was so bad. I should just read your grades from now on before I start watching.
Yeah, it was terrible, man. But one funny thing, the President Barbie was kind of the only thing I laughed at. And Vanessa Bayer on doing kids news on Weekend Update, because I want to marry Vanessa Bayer. But outside of that, it was like when that ended, I'm like, well, yeah, I'm going to be watching Mad Max just to get the taste of that SNL out of my mouth. But now here's the other thing, Colin. I don't know if you saw that. You just went Friday, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what they did on Saturday?
No.
You guys don't know what they did on Saturday?
I do. On what, at the Music Box?
Yeah. Yeah. Before
Mad Max?
Before they showed Mad Max.
I don't know.
All right, Eric, why don't you tell everybody what they did?
Well, they showed the new Radiohead music video that Mr. Paul Thomas Anderson directed.
In 35.
Wow.
In 35.
Oh, man. Wow. That's amazing. Oh. And you missed that. I just watched that tonight on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched it.
Cool.
I've seen the video, but it would have been 35 millimeter before Mad Max.
Oh, man. I'm sorry, Nick.
Yeah, and you know what? I didn't know about it until was it Saturday about 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm still up and I'm watching TV, and I look at my phone, just checking my phone, and I see that the guys on the Music Box. Did you see the post, Eric?
No.
They actually took a picture of the reel with the.
Oh yeah, that I saw. Yes.
With the container. With the case, with the label on it, and it says, "It looks like we're going to be visiting this." What the hell's the name of the song? I can't remember the name of the song now.
I can't either.
Yeah, I can't. And I watched the video. I watched the video twice over the weekend. But anyway, it was that before we go to a post-apocalyptic land, we will be visiting this place. And I was like, "Are you kidding me?"
Oh,
Are you kidding me? So, anyway, to add insult to injury.
To add insult to injury, they're showing Three Ninjas in 35mm in June at midnight.
Are you serious?
Is that what you're going to say?
No. Are they seriously doing that?
I'm looking at the ad right now, Nick. Three Ninjas, 35mm, midnight show, June 10th and 11th.
Are you sure it's not Ninja 3?
Three Ninjas.
Damn it.
Rocky, Colt, and Tum Tum are three brothers who are going to be ninjas.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, if it were Ninja 3, The Domination, that would be it.
In 35.
We'd all be there.
Oh, are you kidding me? Yeah. I would forget about my phone. So. All right, guys, hang on. All right, we don't have like a lot of movies to talk about. We do have box office and more. Eric and Colin are here, and we're going to take a break right now. We got the news coming up on WGN, and then after the news, we will review all the new movies, obviously, including Captain America: Civil War, right here on 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. Yeah, welcome back. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And we are here until 5 a.m. And Steve Grzanich at 5 with the opening bell, and Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. Phone number is 312-981-7200. Talk and text. You can also check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show, Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected. And, a little bit later on, my dad will call in because it's Monday, and he'll tell a joke because it's jokey time. And we will we'll review the new movies coming up right here. And here is Eric and Colin. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All right, Eric, why don't you tell us about The Man Who Knew Infinity?
Okay. Well, this is the story of the Indian mathematician Rinivasa Ramanujan. And I hope I said that name right, considering that the movie says it about 18 billion times, not to use just another math term. But in the movie, he's played by Dev Patel. And as a young man, he didn't have a lot of education, and was fighting the prejudice of the day. And yet, he was known for creating a dearth of mathematical equations and proofs, things that had never been tried or proved before. And his work travels all the way to England, and it catches the eye of the sort of the English aristocracy, and particularly one man, G.H. Hardy, who's played by Jeremy Irons in the film. And he invites the young man to be a part of the university where he is, where he teaches and everything. And he's not exactly met with open arms. As a student there, he's prejudiced against. And he's, you know, kind of smarter than a lot of the teachers. It's sort of like the real genius of the day in a way, except having to fight just general prejudice and also wanting to really make a name for himself so he can get back to his wife, who he basically married and sort of left very quickly back in India. So this is a movie that sort of follows in the same path of the sort of the recent math genius movies that we've had. We've had The Theory of Everything. We've had The Imitation Game. There was another film about an autistic math genius that was called X Plus Y, but eventually was released under a title called A Brilliant Young Mind. And this one is most definitely the weakest of the bunch. It's a film that, though exploring the life of a mathematician sounds like a very dry subject matter, and even though I was not a fan of Theory of Everything or Imitation Game, at least those movies seem to have some interest in those characters and those real-life math heroes, interest in their work and, you know, sort of what made them tick, and at least try to give us sort of an understanding of what these guys were fighting for. In this movie, it doesn't really have any interest in the math at all, and maybe that's a conscious choice considering, you know, how much can be, you know, be made much interest of mathematical proofs and theorems and stuff. But it just, that almost becomes basically a MacGuffin to the sort of the broader issues of racism and classism and, you know, whether or not Jeremy Irons' Hardy character is actually the main character of the film, considering that the movie is supposed to be about the young mathematician. So it's a movie that, even though it's preaching against the sort of the racism of the day, it actually kind of is pushing its main character to the side a bit. Jeremy Irons' character, you know, opens and begins the movie with narration. He gives some couple of the big speeches in the film about racism and about you know, why this young man is important. And they're even the movie even seems to be taking jabs at A Beautiful Mind by making just sort of offhanded comments about whether or not this guy is actually a figment of someone's imagination. About halfway through, I completely lost interest in this story and what was so special about this, other than he is an historical figure that did something that no one else did and fought, you know, and had to fight to do it. But we don't really understand why anything was special about any of his proofs or any of his about his life. And I found the film really just kind of a big fat bore.
Mm. Okay. It's playing in around 5 theaters in around the city, if you're interested in that. And, you know, it is interesting, Eric, that the movie is supposed to be about, or the subject matter. Jeremy Irons has top billing.
Yeah.
So in the film.
Yeah, you would think that we've sort of, you know, with all the, you know, progressive, you know, movements we've had in this country, that, you know, there's still movies like this that exist, that, you know, that the sort of the white characters would, you know, take center stage while the main focus is just sort of pushed to the side. It's just, you know, you think that we've been beyond that. And the writer director of the movie, Matt Brown, I think it's his debut feature, actually. I don't know. It's a movie that's kind of an independent film in a way. You would think that he wouldn't fall into such a trap, but he really did.
That's too bad. Now, some of the other stuff that came out this week, April in the Extraordinary World, is an animated film, right? What do we know about that, Colin? What do you know about this one?
Only that I didn't get to see it, and I'm kind of disappointed. I think it's playing at the Siskel Center, mm-hmm. and this is a movie from the Studio G Kids, which specializes in releasing some very interesting animated films that don't quite fit the Disney Pixar mold. They're kind of more the Miyazaki thing, but sometimes even more abstract and weird than that. I hear this is terrific. This is a sort of just a visually, you know, gorgeous movie that, you know, just has this kind of Terry Gilliam like fantasy.
Yeah, the trailer's great.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see it. I'm really disappointed that I didn't get to review it tonight, but I'm gonna just kind of tell everybody to go see it anyway, because I love this studio and I want people to go see their movies so they can stick around and keep putting them out. There's a studio that gets nominated for Academy Awards. You know, there's usually one or two films in the animation category every year that get nominated that nobody's ever heard of. And it's usually because of this studio that puts them out. They do some really interesting work for kids and adults. So yeah, this is, I hope it's as good as the other stuff that I've seen from them, and I hear it is. So
okay, now what do we know? What is the Phantom of the Theater? Do we even know? Does anybody know what that is?
It's an Asian I don't know if it's a martial arts film or not, but it's an Asian film.
Okay,
that's about all I know about.
Right.
I think it sort of loosely has the Phantom of the Opera thing going for it.
Okay,
but I think it's a martial arts film.
All right. Mm. How about Sworn Virgin?
Foreign film, played some film festivals.
Okay.
I have not seen it.
All right. What about June Bride?
Documentary.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. A lot of great stuff came out this week.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Eric, why don't you tell us about Code of Honor?
Okay. So, while no one saw the G-Kids movie this week, I saw this new Steven Seagal movie.
Great.
Yeah, and I think the only reason I admitted to even seeing this movie is because I want just some proof that I actually did watch the Steven Seagal movie in its entirety, and that it's
wow.
actually in theaters.
It is.
Steven Seagal movie has been released in theaters.
Wow.
Yeah. And like most Steven Seagal movies, since... since the 1990s, there's not really a lot to this one. Steven Seagal plays an ex-military type, CIA, Special Forces. You know, he's got mad skills, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he's going around basically cleaning up the dregs of society. He's blowing up strip clubs. He's taking down drug deals and whatnot. And the only person who seems to know that he exists, or maybe he still exists, is someone who used to know who he was. And that person is played by the Where Are They Now file, from the Where Are They Now file, Craig Sheffer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Star of Nightbreed.
Star of Nightbreed.
Right.
Yeah. And he's been breeding on a lot of pizzas, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, he'll fit right in a Steven Seagal movie, then.
Yes, exactly. It's sort of a bad. I bet the eating budget on this film was just fantastic. So just Craig Sheffer just basically bug eyes his way through this entire film, basically being the guy that, you know, sort of knows something about this guy that the cops don't know anything about, and you know, no one in the the political scene can figure out why all these mob killings and all these bad people are being killed. It's basically Steven Seagal doing the Punisher in a way.
Uh-huh.
Okay, except the movie again is more focused on Craig Sheffer. Steven Seagal is actually more of the supporting character.
Wow.
In this movie.
Okay.
Yeah. And and like you said, there really is not that. That's pretty much all there is to it until you get to the third act of this film, which is probably the reason why I kept watching this thing, because I sensed that it was going in a certain direction.
Yeah.
And the movie only confirmed all of my suspicions, and it made me glad that I stayed and watched to the end of this movie, because the third act of this movie is so patently ridiculous. That I was almost happy that I watched the movie. It's garbage. It's mm-hmm. terrible. The action is really poorly done. Craig Sheffer gives an embarrassing performance in the film. I think there's someone else of importance in the movie that I can't even remember, but he dies, so who cares?
Okay.
Yeah, it's just, but like, you know, if you want to see a Steven Seagal movie in theater, I mean, like, some people want to see Mad Max in 35mm. I'm sure someone else wants to see that rarity of Steven Seagal in a movie theater. And they can say, son, remember that I saw On Deadly Ground when it came out.
Yeah.
Wow.
So what is it about the third act that's so ridiculous?
We're just going to spoil it here?
Well, you don't have, I mean, you know.
Well, he's not real.
Oh, okay.
Craig Sheffer and Steven Seagal are the same person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's Fight Club.
Yeah.
Okay.
Except, like, none of the... I mean, like, Fight Club takes some liberties with the reality a little bit.
Yeah.
This movie has no pretense of that. There's, like, they don't even try to really explain how these two people could be in the same place at the same time kind of thing.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Code.
But it does have that sort of that Fight Club sequence where it retraces the steps and you see Craig Sheffer in the role of the Steven Seagal character doing all the stuff. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Code of honor.
Code of honor.
I'm a little disappointed that, because I always like the fact that 90% of the Steven Seagal movies can be advertised as Steven Seagal is.
Right.
Than the title of the movie.
Hard to Kill.
Hard to Kill, Above the Law.
He is on Deadly Ground.
On Deadly Ground, The Glimmer Man.
He is under siege.
He's under siege. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do that. Steven Seagal is Code of Honor. You can't say that. That's disappointing.
Yeah, after his time in Hollywood, I think the Fire Down Below, I think, best sums him up.
Yeah. All right, Code of Honor, Steven Seagal's latest. Yes.
That's right.
It is 2016.
Yes.
All right. Hang on.
Okay.
All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, there's this little movie, a little independent film that came out this week that we want to talk about called Captain America Civil War. Nice little low-budget independent film. All right. We'll take a break. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we are talking about the movies. Not a lot to talk about. We will talk about the box office and do some analysis with Eric as well. But only one really, really big movie came out this week, and that's the new Steven Seagal. No, it's It's the new Captain America Civil War motion picture. And Colin, tell us about Captain America Civil War.
All right. So this is the third Captain America movie, or the fifth if you count the Avengers movie. And this one centers around basically the idea of the Avengers being governed by state or the country or the UN, who knows, but or because of the collateral damage that has been done in the wake of all these battles they've had in the previous movies, all the lives that have been lost, you know, when buildings are crumbling and everything. Iron Man is ready to sign, you know, whatever document out of a kind of crisis of conscience. But Captain America doesn't feel it's right to have to go through channels before going into battle or trying to stop potential threats as they arrive. So the Civil War in the title refers to their differences in the matter and how that escalates into a battle between, you know, one half of the Avengers and the other half, except for Thor and Hulk, who are not in this film. And Spider-Man and Ant-Man are brought into this conflict that builds up to a confrontation that is definitely one of the main highlights of the entire Marvel cinematic canon. There's also a matter of the Winter Soldier making a return. I'm probably forgetting a bunch of other story elements as well because these damn films are getting so crowded now. But you know, Spider-Man is played by Tom Holland instead of Andrew Garfield, thank God. And so there's been some changes in the casting as well. Okay, I'm not going to get too deep into the plot. There's a lot more going on than what I just said. But suffice to say, you know, I made it very clear on this show that I've just had it, the sort of sick of superhero movies. I'm very indifferent to them. And I think one of the reasons why is I think a few years ago is when we had to sit through the origin story of Spider-Man again. For some stupid reason, and you know, having to get played by Andrew Garfield, and given a poorly written script and poorly, poor direction and everything, I think that's when I sort of reached my, breaking point with superhero movies. So I don't need a third Captain America movie in my life. So all that being said, I quite enjoyed this film. There's, you know, a lot of the action scenes I think are really terrific. They're really just nicely, there's a nice rhythm to them. They are cut together really well. There's no, slow-mo in the middle of them or anything. It's generally very exciting and imaginative. And I really enjoyed the idea of these two characters, Iron Man and Captain America, having a conflict. There is so much more believable and so much more nuanced and nicely handled than Batman versus Superman, which I still don't understand why they were fighting. But this makes sense, and I think I think the cast makes it very believable, and it's interesting that that they're bringing about this problem of all this collateral damage that happens when these Avengers do their thing. I've always enjoyed the Captain America character, and I enjoyed the way that, he interacts with Iron Man. But here I really enjoyed Iron Man's interaction with Spider-Man. So Tom Holland plays Spider-Man in this film, and it is a really welcome change of casting. For those who don't know who he is, his breakout role was a few years ago as the kid in The Impossible with Naomi Watts and Ewan McGregor. He played their son. And is really terrific in that. And he is wonderful as Spider-Man. It's a really imaginative piece of casting. He is very young, much younger than Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield when they played him. And he comes off that way. And Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr. has a lot of fun with that idea. Like I said, the centerpiece of the film is that big conflict. And it is great. Just one of the best, one of the big highlights of the whole Marvel universe, the whole thing, the whole Marvel canon. Easily one of the top, five greatest scenes they've ever done. It is just terrific. Now, I'm still kind of weary about, these movies that are getting very overcrowded with the characters. It's getting a lot to keep track of, and I just don't keep track of it. I always have to have people fill me in before I watch the movie. What happened in the last one? Because I don't remember. But this one, at least, I will remember, if nothing else, that scene. And a lot of the other action scenes are also pretty memorable as well. So I'm recommending the new Captain America movie, and I'm happy to finally recommend a comic book movie. So,
all right. We're going to find out what Eric thought of the Captain America Civil War motion picture after we break for the news coming up here on WGN. And now, Colin, I'm the same way that you are in terms of I don't remember who did what in the movies.
Yeah.
But the movie in a couple of weeks that's going to be released, that's the storylines where I get really confused are the X-Men movies. Because
yeah, I'm the same way.
Because they go through different time. I don't know what? You know, they go through, it's like, what time period are we in now?
Right.
And I watched the final trailer for, and I think the X-Men movie looks really, I think the X-Men movie looks great. I think Apocalypse looked great. But like at the end, it's like Wolverine, they show Wolverine, or at least his hand with the blade shooting out.
Yeah.
And people got real excited. And I was thinking to myself, he's in all of them. Why?
Yeah.
Why is this a big deal? And I had to have Dan explain it to me. Why it's a big deal that Wolverine is in it. Because I was just like, because I remember people were like, oh, man, Wolverine, the final shot of the trailer is Wolverine. I'm like, well, yeah, because he's in all of them.
Right. That's what I thought, too. But, okay.
So, I guess it's a big deal. I don't know. Yeah. All right, we have to break. Eric is going to tell us what he thought of Captain America Civil War. We'll talk more movies, and we will also talk box office. A shorter edition of the Monday movie reviews because, well, only one major movie opened. So we'll find out what Eric thought of it. We'll find out what I thought of it, and we'll talk box office as well. All that coming up right here after the news on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. How you doing? It is Nick DiGilio. I'm your overnight dude, 2 to 5 a.m. 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. At 6 o'clock, it's Steve Cochran with your morning drive. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, it's interactive, it's constantly updated, is our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. So coming up a little bit later on, we're going to be talking. Yesterday was Mother's Day, so we're going to be talking about memorable moms in entertainment, TV, movies, all that cool stuff. That'll be coming up. And because the big movie that came out this weekend and that we are in the middle of reviewing right now is Captain America Civil War, we're also going to jump in onto the subject of superhero movies and all that cool stuff. So that's coming up. My dad will call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning and it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Okay, let's get back to the movie reviews here. Eric and Colin are back, and Colin just told us about Captain America Civil War and gave it a very positive review. And Eric, you're up next for Captain America.
Well, simply put, I think this is the best movie in the Marvel canon since the first Avengers movie that Joss Whedon did. It's a film that really knows how to balance the elements of fun, which we've come to expect mostly with a lot of the Marvel films, with sort of with giving full gratification to more broader issues, not just of in the real world, but also within the world that these characters inhabit. I mean, the whole idea of sort of the post 9/11 era of surveillance and government regulation that we've seen. I mean, these are themes that go back to have been explored in a lot of franchises, particularly comic book ones. I mean, the X-Men films have been about that since the very beginning. Even the last Mission Impossible film dealt with that a little bit. And this sort of storyline sort of started with Captain America Winter Soldier, and it was played out a little bit in the lesser Avengers sequel, Age of Ultron. But one of the pleasures of this movie is not just the action sequences that the Russo brothers, who did Winter Soldier, put together pretty beautifully, but the scenes together of Captain America and Iron Man actually debating these issues. And as an audience member, you sort of are sitting there wondering what side you're actually on. And that's a really sort of refreshing thing. Even more refreshing is that all of the characters who have are fighting for whatever particular side they're on, you understand their point of view. You understand where Captain America is coming from. You understand where Tony Stark's coming from. There's even another a villain in the film that when we finally get to know more about his story, we understand his motivations as well. We may not necessarily agree with it, but you understand. I think there's something really interesting that a movie that can pull that off. And like Colin said, like you get to the big mano a mano battle sequence in the movie, the actual civil war that this movie has been building up to, and it's just glorious to behold. I mean, you could take in film school what Batman versus Superman did, and it's far more interesting to see how, you know, the debates about whether or not this movie succeeds or fails, you know, succeeds and fails basically on the debate about the debates in the movie, rather than, you know, it all coming down to who's saying whose mom's name and why are they fighting in the first place. You understand why they're fighting, and then when they finally fight, it's something really enjoyable. It's fun watching all of them put their special powers to good use. Paul Rudd showing up as Ant-Man is welcome. It's a great introduction to Black Panther that makes you sort of curious to see what Ryan Coogler is going to do with that character when he gets his own standalone movie. I'm not completely jaded on the comic book movies, basically because at least two out of, say, three Marvel movies tend to be at least good and occasionally pretty great, like I think this one is.
Okay, yeah, I really liked it. I think it's pretty terrific. I'm more with Colin than totally bonkers over it. I think the middle sequence or the big battle sequence is phenomenal, and you know, really beautifully done. There are some big laughs in this movie too, and some great surprises. You know, you guys told me at Risky Business Tuesday. At the screening, you and Mike Kurz said that I should probably see it ASAP or stay away from the internet. For now, have people spoiled any of this stuff? Have you seen?
I haven't seen. I'm not even exactly sure what specifically the spoilers would be. I mean, other than a few nifty surprises during the actual battle sequence,
right?
Yeah,
yeah, that's probably what I'm talking about.
Okay,
But anyway, it is a very entertaining movie, really well done. And you're right. I mean, you know the more you talk about Robert Downey Jr., he's phenomenal. And I know that I'm stating the obvious, but like he's really terrific in this movie, and everybody is really terrific, but particularly Downey. He's able to really play this stuff. He has that ability to sort of wink at the camera and know it's absurd, and yet make it real. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He just has this ability to play that razor's edge thing where it's like, look, you know, this is absurd, it's ridiculous, and yet I'm fully committed to this universe, and I will make it believable, and I will also make it very, very funny. And the sense of fun that you get when you see the good Marvel movies is what is missing entirely from that Batman Superman movie. I mean, it's like night and day. Well, literally. but it's like seriously, I mean, there's no sense of like the you said, Colin, I had, like, when I was watching Batman versus Superman, I'm like, oh, what are they're fighting? Because why? Because yeah. Superman knocked out a building that one of his employees was in, and now his legs are crushed. You know what I mean? But here it's made very, very clear what they're fighting about, that it's very important. And you do take a side. What side were you guys on? Colin? Did you pick a side?
It's hard. I think I was more on, it was really hard actually.
Yeah, it is.
On this one. I mean, how do you argue, you know, Tony Stark's crisis of conscience, you know, when he's given a very personal video of somebody who was killed and, you know, he's responsible. He can't run away from that.
Yeah.
So you can't argue with that. you know, and then it's, you know, and then Captain America's got a, you know, doesn't have that, but he, you know, he's got, he's duty bound because he's Captain America.
Right.
That's what he's bred for. So, yeah, no, they make it very hard to pick a side, which is good.
Yeah. What about you, Eric? Did you have a?
No, I didn't. I didn't, because it was just like every time one of them would speak and they would go like, I'd go like, well, that's an interesting point. The other one would then make an equally interesting point. And I think, you know, because I've seen a lot of chatter on Facebook about the movie this weekend, and I think that, you know, there are people picking sides, and very harshly so. Like, this person was being a, you know, a jag and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute. Like, what Colin just says, like, Tony, you understand, and it's interesting to parallel that with what you were saying about Robert Downey Jr., in that, you know, clearly he's a character, you know, this could be viewed as sort of him going to sort of the Johnny Depp route of his career, that he's finally made it, you know, in these big blockbuster franchises, and he could just phone in the same Downey shtick that he does. But I think he has the same level of commitment to Tony Stark that Hugh Jackman does to Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that he clearly still, even through the sixth, seventh movie that they've done as this character, that they still have a fondness and they believe in this character. And you see this, an arc not just in one film, but a complete arc of Tony Stark throughout, you know, from all the Iron Man films through what he's done in Avengers. It's very easy to see how he can go from where he was not wanting government regulation in Iron Man 2 to seeing where he is in this movie. And Captain America, well, he's, you know, he's a Boy Scout. And, you know, so I get both sides.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going back and forth too, about it, but it's so entertaining and so well done that all of that stuff becomes like secondary to watching these insane action sequences that are so beautifully done. And I do want to mention this Tom Holland. I know, you know, both of you guys mentioned him. He's great. And this is the, you know, I mean, I just think that this guy kind of steals the movie, in a way. And I didn't expect that at all. It was fun to see Ant-Man come back and Paul Rudd come back. And yeah, I mean, overall, incredibly entertaining. It is 2 hours and like 20 something minutes long, but it doesn't feel like it. And it is everything that the Batman and Superman movie wasn't. And there's just a massive difference between.
And it have very similar storylines when
yes.
you really break it down.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And one is done, one makes all the wrong moves, and one makes all the right moves. And that's all there is to it. So, all right. Well, what do we got next week? We got Money Monster next week, right?
We got Money Monster and some horror film called The Darkness with Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, man.
You're excited. You know about this?
I do. Yeah,
this?
No, I'm not excited. I've seen the trailer. But, yeah, I realize it's coming out.
Gotcha.
So, all right. Well, listen, Colin, thanks, man. We're going to let you go, and then Eric's going to stick around. We'll talk box office. So thank you, Colin. We'll talk to you next week.
All righty.
Okay.
Bye.
There you go. There's Colin. And Eric, hang on.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we will talk about the box office, including exactly how well did Captain America Civil War do. And we'll tell you all about that after the break. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are back reviewing the movies. We just finished reviewing the one big movie, Captain America Civil War. All three of us really, really like it and highly recommend it. It's very, very entertaining. So much better than the Batman-Superman movie. And now we're going to talk about the box office. And Eric writes a box office analysis piece for movies.com. And tell everybody besides here where they can see you on the TVs.
You can see me on the TV and Business First AM every Thursday morning. I believe the show's on at 5 a.m. in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So set your DVRs for that every Thursday morning.
All right. All right, we're talking box office. So here we go. The number one movie in America is Captain America Civil War, $181.8 million. Now, that's a lot of money, but is that considered disappointing?
It shouldn't be. It's only disappointing if you measure it up against what, you know, someone like me said that I thought it was going to do last week. You know, I said on the show that I think I pegged it for 215.
Yeah.
So I overestimated a bit, but you know, 181 million, the fifth largest opening weekend of all time, in no way is that a disappointment.
Mm-hmm. And now, compared to other Marvel films, where does it rank opening weekend wise?
Well, it trails behind both of the Avengers movies.
Okay.
And the number even kind of makes sense because this is actually probably more an Avengers movie than it is a Captain America movie, even. So it's right on parallel. It's like 10 million less than Age of Ultron did. But word of mouth on Age of Ultron was not great. Reviews were, you know, a little more tepid. The reviews for this are much stronger, and the word of mouth is going to be much stronger. And that movie did $459 million, and I think, and Captain America, I'm still pegging, I think is going to end up doing over $500 million.
Okay, so $181.8 million, and this one's got legs. And what is it? Does it have any competition until the X-Men, or no?
Not really. I mean, unless Angry Birds blows up, that's the only thing that could possibly break its momentum. I mean, not that it's going to break its momentum, but could knock it from the perch, no pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, Money Monster is going to come nowhere close to it.
Right.
It's probably might even finish third behind Jungle Book.
Yeah.
The week after that, I mean, you have Angry Birds, you have Neighbors 2, and Nice Guys, which I don't think Nice Guys is going to do much, but... the over-under, based on the history and the numbers, suggest that the over-under next week for Captain America is like $83 million. I think it's probably going to be higher than that. And if it's if it's somewhere there, then it's probably going to be somewhere in the 50s, maybe on this third week. So like I said, unless Angry Birds really blows up, it'll probably be number one until Memorial Day weekend.
Okay, until X-Men comes out.
Right.
Right. All right. Number two, incredible amount of money this movie's making. Jungle Book, $21.8 yeah. million, dollars, bringing its total up to almost $285 million.
Yeah. It's going to, obviously, it's going to pass $300 million with no problem. It's probably going to, it might even surpass Alice in Wonderland. And if it does that, it's going to surpass Batman versus Superman. It's over $775 million worldwide. And Captain America, by the way, is already at $675 million
worldwide. Wow.
Yeah. So that's $1 billion. That might even be $1 billion sometime after next weekend.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So Jungle Book, obviously a monster,
mm-hmm.
a monster hit. Number three, Mother's Day with $9 million.
Which got a boost this weekend because of Mother's Day.
Ah.
It opened. They opened the movie in a few more theaters, and it actually did better this weekend than it did last weekend.
That's odd.
Yeah, the Mother's Day boost, and you know, there's clearly not a lot for the ladies to see, so they went out and saw this one.
Right.
They were probably estimating a healthier dose of dollars today or yesterday on Mother's Day.
Yeah.
So I mean, $20.7 million, not huge numbers, but if it does overseas what the other Gary Marshall holiday themed films did, it'll be a hit for Open Road and Gary Marshall.
Okay. All right. Number four, The Huntsman, Winter's War, $3.5 million, and that's up to $40 million.
Oof.
Not good.
No, that's not good at all. This is the biggest disappointment for Universal since last year's Seventh Son.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay. Number five, Keanu, $3.3 million, making $15 million in 2 weeks. That dropped off pretty big too.
Dropped off big and doesn't look like it's going to hit $20 million here in the States. So that's going to end up being a disappointment. Even with a small budget, is going to be a disappointment for Warner Brothers.
Yeah, that's too bad because I loved it. Barbershop, The Next Cut, $2.7 million, bringing its total to $48.7 million. How's that compared to the other ones?
Less. I mean, the first one did 75, second one did 65. This one's looking to be somewhere close to 55. So just about sort of the right level of trail off.
Zootopia, still in the top 10, $2.6 million. It had surpassed Batman versus Superman in American dollars.
Yep. It after Batman versus Superman leapfrogged it, Zootopia came right back, held on to its legs, even with Jungle Book out there. And that movie is over $930 million worldwide.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
The Boss, number eight, $1.7 million, $59 million total. The least of all of her movies?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to top out over $60 million. Tammy did over $80 million. So, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll, I have a feeling Ghostbusters is going to fit into the Paul Feig numbers that like Spy and whatnot.
Yeah. But it's also,
we'll,
you know,
we'll
it's
be talking a lot about that movie. In
yeah.
The coming
but
weeks.
It's also got, like, you know, the whole franchise behind
right.
it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, that movie is not, you know, going to live or die on the strength of Melissa McCarthy.
No, clearly not.
But, yeah, of the movies that she has basically led. Yeah, I mean, like, again, she was paired with Sandra Bullock. She was paired with all the Bridesmaids people. So she wasn't the drawing star
right.
of that. Identity Thief, she was with Jason Bateman. That obviously did really well, even though it was awful beyond
yeah.
recognition.
Yeah, terrible movie.
But yeah, The Boss is the weakest of her star vehicles.
I'm really curious to see how this Ghostbusters thing is going to do.
It's, you know, as I've been saying, I think it's the movie that we're going to be talking about for all the wrong reasons. You know, all the things that, you know, all the sort of the backlash and the protest and stories being written about how it's the most hated, you know, trailer
yeah.
ever on YouTube
yeah.
and stuff like that. And, yeah, I mean, is it a movie that, I mean, are guys really going to be protesting this movie?
Ridiculous.
Idiots
ridiculous.
Out there, yeah. And it's going to be questioned whether or not the movie's good. That, you know, that'll cure all ills right there.
Yeah.
If the movie's any good, people will, you know, will hear about it. And whether or not it's going to be a, you know, a rallying cry for women.
Yeah.
You know, are women going to show up to this? Are they going to take their daughters to it? Even if it's, you know, in the PG-13 realm. So it's going to be, that's one of the most curious movies of the summer.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right. Now, real quickly, Batman versus Superman came in number 10, $1 million. Its total in America is $327 million. Is Warner Brothers going to spin this some way?
Well, they've been quietly spinning and saying, like, oh, it's a success, and it is. It is in profit, technically.
Yeah.
But you'll notice there are a lot of, you know, unsubtle changes that are happening to the DC universe. I mean, it was just announced this weekend that Ben Affleck all of a sudden has an executive producer credit on Justice League.
Right, I saw that.
You know, and that's basically saying, like, yeah, let's give it to the guy that kind of, you know, has won an Oscar.
Yeah.
And who's directed some really quality films.
Yeah.
So let's let him have it. It's the same kind of BS when they made Christopher Nolan a producer of the Man of Steel.
Right.
Basically, you know, they wanted Christopher Nolan to direct the film, and he didn't want to do it, but they wanted him on as a consultant.
Right.
But then Zack Snyder took the realm, you know, of
yeah.
it and tried to make a Christopher Nolan movie and failed miserably.
Yeah. No. All right. Well, so Captain America did very, very good numbers, and it'll continue to do some big numbers. And there you go. So next week we've got Money Monster is the big one.
Pretty much it. Yeah.
Okay. All right, Eric. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Sure thing.
Okay.
As always.
All right. Take care. There's Eric Childress. Check out the Chicago Film Critics Festival, which is happening at the Music Box May 20th through the 26th, and you can read Eric at. Movies.com and RogerEbert.com as well. All right, we will review all the new movies again next week. Right now, we got a break for the news on 720 WGN.